Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and our great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, also S&R Remodeling, the Axley Law Firm, St. Vincent de Paul, AMS, and others. All right, joining us now from One Wisconsin Now, a really quiet, demure man. I hate interviewing him because it's so tough prying an opinion out of him. So, Scott, please work with me here today. Scott Ross. Will you please just speak up?
I will try to, Sly.
Okay.
Thank you for having
and
me.
And I'm really sorry that I didn't have this Stand With Governor Walker song queued up for you. All right, before we get to anything else, I want to know about what's going on at the Madison Public Library, that socialist building with books in downtown Madison on April 17th.
Yeah, Sly. Well, there's been so much going on ever since November in terms of progressives really jumping out of the woodwork to want to do something about not just the threat that the state is enduring, but what the nation is enduring under Trump and Republican control. And so we are doing something called a message training for activists. And this isn't Sly where we're going to tell you what to say. That's not my gig. What we're going to do is we're going to talk to folks about organizing their thoughts and systems that we have to ensure, and vehicles, to ensure that your message gets out there, whatever it is you care about. You know, I think one of the things for progressives and Democrats that's been a challenge is that they are so afraid of saying the wrong thing sometimes, they don't say anything.
Right. Why weren't you around in the Carlton Armstrong days? You could have guided him in a maybe a little more appropriate manner, huh?
Well, I'm a newcomer to Wisconsin. I moved here about 20 years ago.
Were you even born in 1970?
I was. I was born Flag Day 1969.
Oh, okay.
Which I always have to plug. June 14th, 1969. June 14th is the same birthday as Fighting Bob La Follette, Che Guevara, and Donald Trump. So it is a revolutionary birthday.
And
right?
I share a birthday March 20th with Mr. Rogers.
There
and I have a similar style in broadcasting.
Exactly. Again, that Wisconsin-Pennsylvania connection.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. All right. So you say that because people are worried about saying the wrong thing, they don't say anything. Is that because of right-wing radio browbeating them?
I think a lot of it has to do with that. And I also think because, you know, given some of the challenges that the left has faced in terms of electoral victories, that everybody's sort of, you know, we do this sort of quadrennial or biannual kvetch over, well, what aren't we saying correctly? You know, so we have to spend money to figure out, I don't know, a new strategy for getting young people to care about Social Security, just things like that. So what our training is about is we're going to talk a little bit about organizing your thoughts, making sure you can stay on what your message is, different vehicles that are out there. You know, we've got a whole team of people at One Wisconsin Now who deal with social media, who deal with the, you know, communications on a daily basis, and we're going to, you know, bring in activists to help harness the power that they have to get it more out into the mainstream media.
Because unlike the sort of Hannitys of the world, progressives have varied thoughts. We don't always walk in lockstep. Just look at a circuit court race in Dane County for fireworks, you know, where you had two liberal candidates running against each other. There's not always unanimity among progressives.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Here's the thing, Sly. I had the great chance. I was invited this weekend to go out and speak to the Columbia County Democrats. They're having their annual meeting, and they were kind enough to invite me to be their keynote speaker. And one of the things I said to them, and I think this is so important, is progressives, Democrats, cannot allow the media and the Republicans to attempt to take what is our greatest strength, our diversity, and turn it into our biggest weakness. Because you can go to, you know, Eau Claire or Superior or Green Bay or Milwaukee or rural Dane County, and we all share the same challenge, which is Scott Walker's policies have failed us and divided us. So one of the things we want to talk to folks about
people in River Hills have done pretty well.
Good point. but what we want to do is we just want to tell people, like, we want to show people through examples and through systems that we've come up with, here's a way to get your message out. Here's a way to get your voice out. That's the more important thing. It's not your message. It is that your voice, and you're using it on a daily basis, however it is you want to use it, in a way that helps move your agenda forward.
How rudimentary is it? Speak in full sentences?
You know, I mean, things just like, you know, for instance, you know, when I go and do, you know, I sort of big TV, right? A couple weeks ago, I got flown out to D.C.
You got a good one in.
You know, I got to fly out to D.C. a couple weeks ago.
Your Scott Walker analogy was not missed.
And I, you know, and the thing is that I organize my thoughts to what I want to say, right? And I'm not saying I'm not responsive to questions, but I have an idea of what I want to go in and talk about, and it helps me do a better job of honing and making sure I get the points out that I want to get, because I think they're important, and then I can extemp and freelance sometime with a joke or two, and some of them work and some of them don't. Thankfully, that one that you're talking about actually worked.
It certainly did. Using cliches or broad generalizations, you know, we all talk about messaging. It's real clear. Democrats are for the middle class. That isn't penetrating people, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think we'll try and convey to our folks who come to the library on the 17th, I think it's 6:30 to 8:30. And it's interactive, too. We're not lecturing. We're going to let people, like, figure stuff out themselves and with our help. But one of the things I think is central in the whole, at least here in the state of Wisconsin, is Wisconsin deserves the best. Are you getting the best? You know, wherever you're at, wherever you're from, Keel, I don't know, Viola, are you getting the best? Because if you're not, it's been the Republicans who have been in charge for 6 years.
Scott Ross, One Wisconsin Now, with us at slysoffice.com. I assume by now you've seen the texting back and forth. Thank God no sexting back and forth between Scott Walker and Robin Voss.
They save that for the chats with the corporate lobbyists.
You know, there was an old rule in Chicago politics, whether it was Jane Byrne or Richard Daley or any of them, when you wanted to have a conversation like that, you took a little ride in the elevator, right? And you made sure that nobody got on.
It's like a dear friend of mine in labor out in D.C. taught me when I was working for him during the 2004 election. He said, Ross, say what you don't have to write and nod when you don't have to speak.
Nice.
You know, and that is something I have definitely taken to heart. The governor and the speaker have chosen not to take that route.
Well, so here they are. Walker resents Voss because some of Voss's, he gave some of the freedom to his members to run away from Scott Walker's terrible budget. And Voss resents that Walker is tweeting out, I'm going to veto any new taxes for road building. But I love at the very end of all this back and forth, the governor's spokesman said, but they really like each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're the best of friends, for sure. I think it's interesting because, you know, if you look at not just the content of it, but really the tone with it, is that it is a reiteration that our governor there is paper out there with a thicker rind on it than Scott Walker's skin, because he is incredibly petty. And I've experienced this myself. And friends of mine have. I mean, you think about a couple weeks ago when Governor Walker was doing his state of the when he was doing the state of the state address or the budget address. I forget which one. But in the middle of his speech, he extemped and referenced, you know, how Gordon Hintz had that bingo game that Dan Bice reported about. And I'm in a press conference a couple weeks ago that Walker was having. It was he and Brad Schimmel, our potato of an attorney general, Spud. Kurt Bauer from WMC, Rick Essenberg from the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, and the Judicial Crisis Network, which is this group that spent $17 million to do ads for Neil Gorsuch. And in the middle of the thing, Walker, all of a sudden, I'm there. Walker says, you know, I'm not the president. I mean, Scott Ross back there will tell you it. You know, how petty and small is this guy?
That?
Yeah, isn't that, you know, I guess it's, you know, if you get in his kitchen.
But it shows you he's kind of like Trump in that he's watching all media. He is paying attention. I'll give him that. He's a junkie.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean,
but this is my favorite exchange, okay? On one text, Walker laments being trashed by lawmakers for his proposal for the last state budget. Voss complains that being shot out of Walker's crafting of his 2017-2019 budget. In another text, Voss criticizes Walker for upstaging a recent hearing of the legislature's budget writing Joint Finance Committee, with a Twitter point in which the governor vowed to veto the gas tax. The more your staff keeps injecting himself into the JFC process, the more difficult it is, blah, 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 blah. Then Walker says, that's not my staff, that's me.
Yeah, no, I saw that one. That was the one that jumped out at me, and I said, wow, he is not playing around in that particular text exchange. And I think it's interesting because I think what it shows is it shows the pickle that the Republicans are in terms of this entire budget. And what one of the biggest failings they have currently is this idea of transportation. And I don't want to go off on a big long thing about transportation because like everybody will fall asleep. But what I think is most important is it shows that Walker doesn't feel like he needs road builder money in order to win re-election. That he's got Diane Hendricks and he's got the U lines.
Widow Hendricks.
The Widow Hendricks, of course, yes. You know, he's got those folks, so he doesn't have to worry about in-state money in a sense, even though, you know, Hendricks is in-state. Whereas the Republicans, you know, not only the legislative Republicans have the challenge of having to raise money, but they also have the, because they don't have that national fundraising network like Walker does, but they also have their members who are hearing it from their constituents about why are my roads so messed up?
And Walker took the best person from his administration that actually had some knowledge for his area, fired him, and replaced him by the former mayor of Superior. By the way, I love Superior. It votes great at the top of the ticket. They seem to have a bad record picking mayors.
Good God. And I don't want to go off on a clownish tangent.
He's not related to you, by the way.
No, he is not. But let me just tell you this. I watched, because Dave Ross ran for lieutenant governor back in 2010. He was in the primary. And I remember this debate that I watched because I wanted to punish myself. So I watched a lieutenant governor debate between, Mark Green, the guy from, he was the, he was the
from
rep.
Monroe.
Yeah. I mean, Mark, I am totally spacing on his name.
The football player.
Yeah. Clayfish, yeah. Some guy, some veteran, and Dave Ross. And they started asking me about movies. Like an off-topic question. And Dave Ross offered that he and his wife had just seen a movie that they thought would become their favorite movie, which was Old Dogs, which was the horrid family comedy with John Travolta and Robin Williams, that one reviewer in writing about it said, if Old Dogs was a person, I would stab it in the face. And so, but yeah, no, again, it's...
That's a fond memory you have.
Yeah, it just happens to be one of those ones that I have.
By the way, if they don't have any money for roads, why are they building a brand new transportation headquarters, which, by the way, and I don't know if you know this, the public will not be able to use. They're pushing the whole retail outlet out of that building. You won't be able to take your driver's test or get your license plates or anything else in that building.
Really? Well, I mean, it goes the way
that you can look into that.
The way they do business. You know, the way Scott Walker does business. I mean, he's been in office since June 30th, 1993. He has been elected official. And the one thing that we know in the consistency throughout his 20-plus years in office is that he's not good at his job. And when he was the Milwaukee County Executive, if you remember what would go on then, he would purport these budgets that just literally allowed him to say, I didn't raise taxes, that were insane. And the county board would come in and say, there's no way you're doing this. We're going to, you know, get rid of this. He would veto it. They would override him, and they'd have to do the hard work. What's interesting about this is Walker's had lockstep support in the legislature his entire time, beginning with, you know, the early attacks on voter rights, obviously Act 10, all the garbage from the first state budget. This is the first time he's had real opposition, and right now he is failing the test because they've decided they're no longer putting up with this.
You forgot the first thing they did, and that was take people's rights away to get the records of their elderly parents being mistreated at nursing homes.
You're absolutely right.
That was the first thing
they
did.
You're absolutely right.
Okay, so Scott Ross with us here at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Scott Ross back with us here at SlysOffice.com. This is Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson was reelected on Donald Trump's coattails or whatever. The strangest election night I think you probably can ever remember, that one, right?
It was a terrible one, and I was on TV for 5 hours. It was
horrible. Were you on Channel 15 or something that night? Oh, that must not have been fun. Our buddy Bill McCosh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, Bill's a good guy.
Yeah, he is a really good guy, but let's not kid ourselves. Bill is not where the Republican Party is currently.
No.
You know?
That's why he focuses on hockey now, which is good. Okay, here is Ron Johnson talking about the Supreme Court seat that the Republicans stole.
This was a big issue in the election, in Wisconsin and nationally. Republicans said, let the American people decide not only the direction of the country, but the composition of the court. And they did. They spoke. They could have elected Hillary Clinton. They could have elected Russ Feingold in Wisconsin, but they reelected me and they elected Donald Trump. Our 10 electoral votes in Wisconsin went to Donald Trump. And so the voters spoke, and I think we should respect the voters' wishes. And again, Judge Gorsuch is such a highly qualified jurist. He's a judge. And the quote I've been using is his quote that defines what a judge ought to be. A judge should be applying, not altering the law. Any judge that likes all of his opinions is probably a pretty bad judge, reaching for the result he desires as opposed to the result the law compels. Now, that is the quintessential definition of a judge. We need judges to stay in their lane, to rule on the law, have the integrity and fidelity to the law and the Constitution. We've got enough judicial activists, enough super legislators. We got enough legislators here in Congress. We don't need them on the judicial bench.
Okay. I haven't heard anybody ask the question to either Senator Johnson or President Trump or anyone else. If Ruth Bader Ginsburg decides to retire in the fourth year of Donald Trump's presidency, is Donald Trump going to nominate somebody for the Supreme Court?
Absolutely he will. Listen, we know from the Republicans that they just simply think the rules don't apply to them. There have been numerous Supreme Court justices who were appointed in the fourth year of a president, or were nominated in the fourth year of a president's term, and then subsequently put on the court. What we had under what the Republicans did with Merrick Garland is unprecedented in this nation's history, in every way, shape, and form. We have never had a justice who was nominated who did not receive a hearing and who did not receive a vote unless the president withdrew their nomination or they stepped down. That is the only time in American history this has happened. And the idea that Ron Johnson would go out there and try and pretend, and the Republicans did this because that's what they do, to pretend that the last year didn't happen and to dominate the narrative and to be able to make that happen. I mean, let's not kid ourselves, Sly. How many times do you remember the idea of Merrick Garland and the unprecedented obstructionism, particularly on judicial nominees, come up during the Johnson-Feingold race? It came up during the one debate. I saw that because Russ did a hell of a job in terms of articulating just how ridiculous it was. Right. But the media wasn't interested in covering that. And I know because we were pushing them constantly about that because we do a lot of work with the courts and we have a very, you know, we were very concerned about what might happen with the Supreme Court, particularly first because of our voter rights lawsuit, which is being appealed by the state right now, the Seventh Circuit, but also because I'm 47 years old and only 15 months of my life has it not been a conservative-controlled U.S. Supreme Court. And if you think about the sea change that could have happened if the Republicans didn't have that almost lock guarantee that whatever they put up was going to be declared constitutional.
Well, the other thing that Ron Johnson talks about in that clip is that he's just a judge, no judicial activism. Was there more judicial activism in Citizens United than all the other cases in the country's history?
With the possible exception of Bush v. Gore.
Okay.
The possible exception. But yeah, no, that's exactly. You're exactly right on
that
slide.
Citizens United actually had greater implications in some respects.
Absolutely. Because Bush v. Gore was, you couldn't use it again. It was the first case where you couldn't use it as a precedent.
Uh-huh. It was almost like Catherine Harris was a justice.
It was absolutely like that. The hypocrisy, the hypocrisy of what the Republicans did was stealing this seat. And not only that, Sly, but, you know, Donald Trump won the Electoral College votes, but he lost by 2.8 million votes. And so he had an obligation to pick a consensus candidate. And every justice other than Clarence Thomas for the last 125 years got at least 60% of the votes when they were up. Every single justice, 125 years or 175, 125 years, had at least 60% of the votes for confirmation. Certainly, two of Obama's three nominees had that. Kagan and Sotomayor had just over 60 votes, 65, 67, I think was the two. He had a responsibility to pick a consensus candidate, and instead he picked a radical extremist. I mean, I'm sure you watched Senator Franken's grilling of him related to that trucking
case. I've never been the biggest Senator Franken fan, but since Donald Trump got elected president, I know that like a switch flipped on with him. Yeah. He has become, both with the Sessions hearings and the hearings for Gorsuch, that the case with the truck driver is just the example of the absurdity of this ridiculous federalist society nonsense that they've been pushing this pablum out for the longest time. There's no reality other than they build their cases, or they want the outcome they get all the time. It's a lie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his case, you know, the case of the trucker is just, I mean, it's appalling. There's, you know, the Hobby Lobby stuff. There's his utter and complete contempt for working people.
Binding arbitration on credit cards.
Exactly. I mean, you know, there is no, yeah, binding arbitration and the arbitration process is one of the biggest issues in which consumers have been screwed, you know, over the last 20 years in terms of the increase of use of that, because it so favors corporations that have lawyers to be able to take care of all that stuff. And let me just do this since, you know, I have to. This is my imitation from listening to the Jeff Sessions hearing. This is my imitation of Chuck Grassley. Senator Sessions. Sorry, I just needed to do that. I had to do that. I had a John Kasich, too. I used to be able to do John Kasich. So I have obscure, you know, mimicking that I can do of politicos. So, but I got to hear somebody from Pittsburgh first for a little while before I can get the Kasich, because he's from Pittsburgh. So,
is he from Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Paul Ryan, this is a man who makes a show out of going to Mass every Sunday at St. John Vianney Catholic Church on Racine Street in Janesville, right? I have to tell you, when I hear him say things like this, now this is the guy from the Weekly Standard interviewing him. Listen to this.
You have been, you know, very clear for years, and we've seen compelling PowerPoint presentations. Yeah. About how the entitlements growing out of control is driving the country into a ditch on the debt.
Yes.
And we have a president of the United States who basically seems pledged not to touch entitlements. Where does that leave us?
So it's the healthcare entitlements are the big, big, big drivers of our debt. There are three: Obamacare, Medicaid, and Medicare. Two out of three are going through Congress right now. Two, so Medicaid, sending it back to the states, capping its growth rate. We've been dreaming of this since I've been around, since you and I were drinking at a keg. You know,
I was thinking about something else. He was thinking about reforming Medicaid.
I was. I've been thinking about this for a long time. We are on the cusp of doing something that we've long believed in.
When you hear Paul Ryan bragging about thinking of, you know, drinking at a keg at college at whatever that two-bit school he went to in Ohio. Did I say that? I think I did.
Miami University, also the home of Ben Roethlisberger.
When you hear him bragging about wanting to cut Medicare as a college kid drinking beer, what is wrong with that man?
It's just evil. And, you know, Paul Ryan and I could have gone to college together. Like, if you could put, like, here, you know, talk about a terrible high school class. Ryan's Priebus, Scott Walker, Paul Ryan and I all could have gone to the same high school, right, because of our ages. Those guys have done different things with their lives than I have. But I think about when I was back in college. And we were, you know, I remember there was a lot of stuff going on with LGBT rights at the time. You know, and back then it was like, you know, they had added to the, you know, to the lesbian and gay caucus bi.
Uh-huh.
And people were fighting to make sure that people had more rights. You know, this sort of like, you know, you could come out of the closet and talk about issues like that. You could come out and be who you are and not be prosecuted, not be persecuted, not be judged. And the idea at the very same time when this was actually what was going on campuses, this guy is pretending as though he were back doing that. It seems, I mean, you know, maybe he has like a, you know, dog-eared, well-worn copy of, you know, The Fountainhead next to a tube of KY. But that's just evil.
Wow.
You know, that's just evil, especially considering, you know, the fact that he's talked about before, you know, with his home life having to rely on Social Security, you know, as a result of his father's death.
I wonder if you're going to get PolitiFact on the fountainhead next to the tube of KY. That'll be interesting to see if PolitiFact decides to find out whether he really did have those two things next to each other.
Exactly. Well, they probably will do stuff like that. And, oh, can you only get, you know, New Glarus beer in Wisconsin, other than things like we've been pushing them to do, like, for instance, Scott Walker going around the state for the last 3 years saying voter ID makes it easier to vote. Sorry, a little PolitiFact rant there. But, yeah, no, I mean, Paul Ryan, listen, it is so appalling when you think about this pampered scion, you know, who went to Congress basically as soon as he was done with college, right? Worked for Brownback. He worked for Bill Bennett, Gambling Bill Bennett's Empower America.
He was working at Tortilla Coast briefly after he lost his job with Bob Caston.
Mm-hmm. And Bob Caston, yes, I forgot that. But then for basically since 1999, he has been on the public dime. His kids have never spent one day of their lives not on taxpayer-financed health care. He has all the trappings of, you know, so much privilege that none of us have.
He lives in the Parker Penn Mansion.
You know, and yeah, and to have that sort of contempt for poor people that, you know, I got called out. Joy Reid called me out on when we were on MSNBC a couple weeks ago because I was talking about the health care bill, the fizzling health care bill. And I talked about how, you know, Paul Ryan had been bullied, basically, or he had been rolled into considering including in the health care plan from the Freedom Caucus things like taking away eyeglasses from kids, which was one of the things he was willing to wheel and deal on. And she came back and she's like, that's not him being rolled. He lives for that stuff. And I was like, mea culpa, you're right. You're right. He is just one evil piece of human sewage when it comes to his contempt for poor people in the state of Wisconsin and across the country. And the thing that really makes me angry about this, Sly, is that he's gotten a free pass here in the state of Wisconsin. He is treated, I mean, I don't know if you call it white privilege or right privilege, but when's the last time you saw the media criticize him in the state of Wisconsin? You know, save for I saw Janesville, of all places, the Janesville Gazette took a shot at him for trying to close Planned Parenthoods. You know, but beyond that, I mean, this is a guy who has been able to walk down the road without ever having to deal with the implications of what he's doing or be criticized, called out, or even held accountable.
All right. Finally, you know, you and I don't see eye to eye exactly in how the limits of the Second Amendment always. We have a slight differentiation. You and your friend has a closer view with mine. Let's listen to State Senator David Craig, who I know you're a big fan of from Waukesha County. All right. Here he is talking about why we should get rid of all permitting for concealed carry.
So the reaction from Democrats and from other people, some other people, is that why would we want to do something where we remove the training component?
So when we passed Act 35 in 2011, one of the standards that we had for training was something as minimal as hunter safety. Hunter safety has nothing to do with pistol training whatsoever. I've taken the course myself. My children will be taking it later this year. You learn zero about carrying a pistol. So let's just start with that as one of the baselines.
You're saying some of the training was simply not effective?
Simply not effective whatsoever. So then what you add to that is the fact that we've had 300,000 people who have permits, but we've allowed permitless carry in vehicles, we've allowed permitless carry in a person's place of their own place of business, all without ill effect. The fact that people have firearms in their homes all the time in Wisconsin without permits, and we haven't had ill effects. More importantly, you add to that, we have 12 states of political ideologies from Missouri to Bernie Sanders' own home state of Vermont. Vermont being the longest state in the union to have something like a permitless carry. And there haven't been any ill effects there. So what makes Wisconsinites any different?
So what do you think of the rationalization that they didn't put the proper training requirements in the first bill for concealed carry, therefore get rid of all regulations?
It's insane. And again, like you say, Sly, you and I have a little bit different. I mean, I don't think that we're all that far off on it. You know, I mean, I grew up in a household with guns. My brother's a huge hunter. I'm not. You know, it's just not my thing. My experiences with guns, for the most part, have been kind of negative, the few that I've had. But the thing is that, you know, that bill, that legislation, the exact same day it was introduced here in the state of Wisconsin, it was also introduced in Michigan.
Shocking.
Yep. Because that's what's going on here. This is not about people's rights. You know, let's separate the people from the special interest groups. And you've got the NRA, which exists in order to sell product. That is what they exist. And they have done a brilliant job of making it seem that what they're standing up for is our people's rights. They may be doing that, but it is because they want to sell more product. And I think that, I remember Phil Graham said it. I always say this about media. Phil Graham said on guns, I got more than I need, but not as many as I want. And I feel the same way about press. We get more than we need, but not as much as we want.
Oh, there we go.
You know?
Not a bad Phil Graham impersonation.
Well, you know, as myself, does it work for Dickie Flat? That was his thing, the Dickie Flat test. That was my big, in grad school, my big, huge opposite for my opposition research class, my big capstone was on Phil Graham. So I know everything about Phil Graham up until 1996.
He seems a little harmless in comparison with these new people.
Yeah, right. I think, it's very clear what's going on here. They are trying to push the envelope as far as they can to support their benefactors. They know that it's a winning issue in the state of Wisconsin, in many parts of the state, to act and pretend as though you're fighting for responsible gun ownership. But I think in a way, Sly, they're doing their cause so much damage, because the more you allow more weapons to get out there without things like background checks at gun shows and stuff, you put guns in the hands of people who are doing bad things that then liberals get to use as a reason to say, this is why we need to get away with it.
He uses the open carry analogy that right now you can carry
the
a
coat.
Gun in the open. You can carry a gun in the open without a permit. The truth is, nobody does that, because if they do that, they're going to get a ticket for disorderly conduct. Very few people carry a gun out in the open. Carrying a gun with you where you travel, where you go to the shopping center, whatever, is a huge responsibility, and you ought to have some skill and proficiency at defending yourself, because it is different than having a gun in your own house.
Yeah, and any responsible gun owner wants that. Any responsible gun owner wants to make sure that people have the right and proper training.
I don't hear people clamoring for this.
No.
They can't fix the roads. What they want to pass is.
Sly, you're not saying the Republicans would put up a Dodge to take attention away from something,
no,
would you?
No, I would never.
But, the thing is that, and this is where we got hip to the idea that this bill had also been introduced on the exact same day in Michigan, was that, Felskowski or whatever her name was, Kaya, now it's Felskowski.
Oh, she's a nice woman. She's a real charmer.
She was the one who wanted college or high school dropouts to be able to be teachers in high schools. That was her thing last budget. But she used the analogy.
Jethro Brodin was going to do a brain transplant with Mr. Drysdale.
You go. Her thing was, if I have a coat on, it's okay, but not a coat. And that literal same line was used in Michigan by the person who introduced the bill. That's how we got hip to the fact that we saw it on Facebook that it was, the same thing was happening, and they used exactly the same line about the coat.
Shocking.
It is shocking.
All right, let's just reiterate your training session, Madison Public Library, main branch, Mifflin Street.
April 17th, 6:30 to 8:30. We're going to have a good time. You are not going to be lectured to. We're going to have a good interactive discussion. We want to fill the house. 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m.
All right. Scott Ross, One Wisconsin Now at SlysOffice.com. Brought to you by the United Steelworkers.